chapter 7, admiration and appreciation. So, I mean, this is going to be like a
she
two.
Pretty much just talks through it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you here, take a book and you can look through it with them. And, oh, I thought I had
it down. Here, you don't use mine, honestly.
Yeah. Let's
take this. Because I have been through it enough. And I'll just take little notes here and there.
Yeah, I meant to break some down. I'll break some down next time. Okay, but when my family complains about little flaws that they have, I like to point out a tree or something. Hi, beautiful nearby in nature.
Hey.
And I'm like, the bark and the trees are perfect. And, you know, the roots are not perfect, but the tree is still beautiful. You don't have to be perfect to be beautiful. So I just feel like that lesson has helped me a lot, too. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of times, you know, when we get impatient with somebody or something, we can say, you know, to ourselves, what do we want from them? I mean, really, when you're being reasonable and realistic, you know, sometimes you know what you don't want. But if you ask yourself, what do I really want from them? Or need from them. I think that kind of flips the other side to you to make you realize that you're expecting a little bit too much and you need to back off and be more reasonable. And, you know, we have to allow people to have their things that they're not good at or they're struggling with and stuff. We have to be more gracious with that. But one of the most glaring unattractive things in any woman is ungratefulness. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that I can't stand if I start seeing it surface in my own life. And it shows itself with a lot of negative characteristics. So, because it will make you frustrated, but it can douse water over anyone's efforts to try to please you too. Because honestly, we talked about it, if it's never enough for you, people will just not want to impress you or they'll just be encouraged to stop trying. So we want to be the person that we appreciate what people do for you. Because if you appreciate it, I know for me, when I do something for someone and it doesn't take a lot, even if they just verbalize a little bit of appreciation, it makes jumping through the hoops that it took to do something for them just so much more worthwhile. And it makes you not hesitate if they ask you to do something again. Mm-hmm. But if you do something for someone and they're just like, yeah, thanks, like, and you're just thinking, wow, do you realize how long it took me to do that for you? it just means nothing.
Right.
It makes it not so much fun to give to that kind of person. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to be that kind of person. So on either side, mm-hmm. we don't want to be the person that isn't fun to give things to because we always expect so much more or we're not able to be grateful for what people do for us. And we don't want to be the person that, you know, we do something when somebody gives to us that we aren't grateful for that too, mm-hmm. you know. And we want to be the one that, you know, doesn't expect things. But I love this scripture verse. It says, words kill, words give life. They're either poison or fruit. You choose. And I love this class because it's all about choices. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I just keep pounding into my head over and over, and it never stops. And it doesn't even stop with my mom, who's in her 80s. It's all about choices. And every day, it doesn't stop. And so we have to make good choices. And I like that because we get to choose what comes out of our mouth. And isn't it funny how, you know, my husband always says, when you walk through certain doors, you can't get back through those doors. It brings you to a different destination. It's almost like the door closes behind you and you're on a path, you know. And so many of our words do that. So be really careful with your words. I love this quote by John Wolfgang Van Gogh. He said, if you treat a man as he is, he will stay as he is. But if you treat him as if he were what he ought to be and could be, he will become the bigger and better man. If your husband learns to trust you and know that you're looking for things to appreciate him in him and appreciate about him, and he knows that you're on his side and you're not there to be picking him apart like so many women do. We use that gift that we have of straightening the pictures and picking the lint off people, and we use it for the wrong things. We get too picky, you know, so we have to be really careful about that. But did you ever know, like, you know, what you believe really does about a person really does change that person? I found that with my kids too. Like, you know, it is so important the way that you raise your kids, because you can just, there's so much hopelessness in the world and so much lack of purpose and so much depression. And a lot of that is by really well-meaning parents that just revolve their lives around their kids, and then all of a sudden their kids just think life is entertainment and they don't know how they fit in to be productive and being a part of the world, and they get depressed. Depression is eating up our whole society. And I feel like the antidote for depression is to, you know, be involved and know what you're created for, you know? And mm-hmm. we always talk about that too, don't we? Because I really feel that when you're living up to your potential, that you don't have all that depression. But when you're living way below your potential, all the area between where you're living and where you could be living, that is just frustrating and discontentment and boredom, and it just makes not for an exciting life at all. Mm-hmm. But when you're living to be the best you can be, it makes life more exciting. Mm-hmm. But you can't get off your game. And if you do, you just pick yourself back up. It's okay if you fall, and you know, a righteous man falls 7 times, just keeps getting back up. You know, just like our diets, just like anything, mm-hmm. just like your workout program, just mm-hmm. like your house cleaning. It's everything. Mm-hmm. When, you know, you get behind, you have to just pick up and keep going. And you can't get overwhelmed. You have to know how to turn that around. But, you know, you can't really manipulate or motivate your husband to work on his character. But when you believe to see the best in him, I feel like admiration just goes a long way. I think that's why the Bible said that love believes the best. You know, it hopes the best, it endures, and it sees the best and believes the best about people. You know, I just always choose to believe the best. And even my mom said, you know what, I would rather believe the best and be disappointed than believe the worst and keep fueling that out. You know, and so really, if you find yourself believing the worst about anything, you know, just flick the switch and decide that, no, I am going to choose to believe the best about this person, you know? And I think that people appreciate that. You know, even though I've had a few incidents that really tested me the last few weeks, but I have really found that, you know, choosing to, even though you get disappointed in someone, sometimes it's spilt milk. You can't really do anything about it. So when you really ask yourself, is that situation more important than the relationship? It's not. And you have to choose to move on. I was giving some relationship advice this week, and I was able to say what we've often talked about in class. Sometimes things get so tangled up from the way people's perspective is. And we try to go back and work things out with somebody over something that happened a while ago, and there's so many emotions in it and so many things that were misread and misunderstood because things weren't communicated properly, that sometimes the best thing to do is what I do when I'm knitting and I have a tangled ball of yarn. I'll just cut off the tangled mess, tie a knot, and it enables me to keep going forward. Sometimes it's not even wise to go back to the scene of the crime or the mm-hmm. time when there was all those misunderstandings and try to work it out, because sometimes it was all a matter of interpretation and what kind of filters we were wearing at the time. And we could have said things with the wrong body language that got interpreted a different way from a perspective that maybe somebody was defensive when we said it and we weren't paying attention. So I think it's really wise to know that it's like, you know what, we can't go back and straighten all that out. But you know, I love you and you love me. We're friends. I don't want to not have you in my life. Let's tie that, you know, let's cut that part off, leave it behind us, and let's go on and make some happy memories together. I think that that is such good advice, and you know, just being able to appreciate somebody and what they are and being able to put what they aren't in the right perspective and not let that rule the way that you look at them and the way you relate to them. It's really important. But the more you compliment your husband and look for the good in him, the more you're going to love him too. I find that when I'm really focusing on finding the good, there are a lot of things to find that I would miss if I wasn't concentrating on. Mm-hmm. You know, so we have to pay attention. You know, sometimes you don't wait until you feel like it. You do it out of a choice. Even if you don't feel like it, force yourself to find the good, to say the good, to do good. Just force yourself to do it. Your feelings will follow. You want your feelings, you want to do the right thing. That's a feeling enough to step out with. So I know how hard the workplace can be. So we all want our homes to be a place where we can kick back and enjoy it. You know, so we have to give a little leeway. So when people are out in the workplace, there are just so many things that you're dealing with. You know how that is. Attitudes, people yelling at you. You were talking about that last week. It's just like, we don't even, you know sometimes my husband's been through things where people were taking credit for his work. He wasn't getting the raise. The boss promised him. He was, you know, let go unexpectedly because they didn't want to pay him out. All these things that happened over and over that, you know, we have to go through once you get out in the world. But make your home a real safe place, not just for yourself, which is really important to do, but for your husband too, and for your families. You know, make it so that, especially now that the holidays are coming up, you know, find things to make your house a safe place for people where, you know, you refuse to talk about certain issues that are going to be divisive, and you make certain rules so that people can really enjoy being in your home, and so that you can kick back, that you don't feel if you're working, that you don't feel you have to come in and not even take your work clothes off and jump in and start scrubbing the floor. And don't expect your husband to do that either. You don't want to have to do that either. So whatever it takes, you know, make your home a really safe place. My daughter is so precious. Her home is such a beautiful place. She fills it with laughter, and there's so much love there. It is just a beautiful thing to see. But she was lamenting to me how she's just not good at organizing. So her house seems unorganized, and several of the other obsessive type A personalities in my family were mentioning that to her. You know, and I will say though, her house is always open. She works two jobs, right. And she has three children that are all three and under. Wow. And her husband works a big job too. So, I mean, she's got a lot going. And I told her, I said, you know what? Don't worry about that. Your house is so happy. Your kids are never going to even remember that your, you know, things weren't in alphabetical order in the cupboard. Your house is clean enough to be healthy and right. dirty enough to be happy. Right. So, you know, we have to be sure that we're not sitting, you know, lamenting over something that isn't a priority to us too, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So make sure that your priorities are right, and be reasonable. And make your house where you can have that center of love, and who cares if the floors aren't dirty for a season, aren't clean for a season, it's fine. But men do need admiration. I used to laugh because one of my sons would always say, Mom, sit here, watch me build this Kinects. I'm like, I don't have time to sit and watch it build Kinects. But it was so cute because I would make time, but he just wanted me to sit and watch him. Right. And I will tell you, there are a lot of, I've been watching over the years, uh-huh. men are like that. They want you to come to their games. They want you to, you know, sit
hang
there.
Hang out with them.
Right, yeah. Hang out.
Yeah. Do nothing with them.
Yeah, or watch football with them.
When you pointed this out, I noticed this.
Yeah,
I
mean, it is funny.
I'm shopping with him for stuff he wants. I don't want to go to Home Depot with you.
I know.
Please just go with me. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, and it's nice when you go.
Yeah.
Because it shows them that you care. It's a way that for us to show them that you care. My mom, she would always sit and watch TV with my dad. And I know how much my mom hated watching TV. She would sit there with little projects and things. But, you know, she just... Yeah. You have to do that. They want you just sitting there. You know? I mean, my son would be, come and watch me play SimCity on the computer. I'm like... But it's so, it's just funny. Men want to be admired. And you know what? Your husband's no different. You know, he wants to be admired. And who do you want to admire him? It's our job.
Yeah.
Our job. No one else gets to do that. So, and if they do, we want it to be very little or nothing compared to the way that we admire them. So learn to, you know, see that. And, you know, people, a lot of times they don't realize self-worth in a man is different than in us. Men are very strongly ego-centered. They really need to have their ego built up. That's why if you even watch little boys and little girls playing, it's different. The boys have to be king of the castle. You know, it's just different. And a lot of times if people don't feel good about who they are or good about themselves, they'll kind of isolate themselves, or sometimes they'll even do the opposite and get real braggadocious, you know. But a lot of times that is the result of an underfed ego. In fact, I can identify with that. Did you ever have a really, you just felt terrible? You know, maybe if you just had a baby, or you just didn't feel like you looked your best, or you're just not feeling, you know, on top of everything, and then you're supposed to go to this big event or a party or even to church, and sometimes you're like, oh, I just don't want to go. Just don't even feel like going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just don't feel like you're really bringing anything that day.
Mm-hmm.
You don't feel like you're in a position to take anything from anybody. You're just don't
in
even want to go.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we don't realize when our husbands get into that kind of a mood that it is actually a sequence where, you know, a lot of times people will be reacting negatively socially, so others react negatively to them because they're being so mm-hmm. negative. And then they know that, so they don't feel worthy of any attention or worthy of any respect. And then they become more concerned about their problems, and then they isolate themselves, and then they seem more introverted and disconnected, self-conscious and selfish. And it is a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And that cycle has to be broken. So when somebody has their sense of value and worth, they are able to then worry more about other people and connect well with other people. You know, and then you're more concerned about others and you're more unselfish, and then others can react more positively to you. Like, honestly, I always say that, you know, we should be so busy taking care of each other that the other person doesn't have to fight for position.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I think just, you know, some of those things that we've learned in this class really helped me through some of the misunderstandings that we had. And even though some of the dynamics weren't right with the way things were communicated and I had to straighten things out with my husband, at the end of the day, I don't want to be the block in, you know, saying no to the things that he feels that he wants out of his life. He works very hard. He works usually the equivalent of 2 jobs every week. Or 3 jobs a week. He works a lot of hours. So I don't want to be the person that is like, no, you can't get that. You can't get that. You know, but on the other hand, you know, you have to work through things. But it's always good to remember, you don't want to be the stopping point for someone. You want to be somebody that's going to be able to accommodate somebody else realizing some of their, you know, dreams and some of the things that they want and making place for them. And then obviously, you know, they in turn, you want to allow them to make place for some of your dreams too. And it I don't think once you start getting that kind of a mindset, most of the times it does encourage it not to be one-sided. But if it does become one-sided, there are some really creative ways that you could, you know, work in some of the things that you really need to. Like, you know, look at, I've made time for you to do, you know, do your antique cars and everything. There's a class I want to take, and I'm just hoping that you will be as, you know, agreeable to me doing that as I was to you doing the car shows. I think you will want to help me achieve what I want to do just as much as I do for you. And I think most of the time people will be reasonable if you're really living in a way that isn't threatening or offensive to somebody. I think a lot of times, just like we talked in the past and we will go through in some future lessons, a lot of times is the way we're living in other areas that cause a problem when we're communicating through something that is a need. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It's not usually that one thing. It's usually the other things that are inviting more control over, you know, a person, or putting someone more on the defense. So when we do have something important, we're not able to get through it because all those other little, you know, niceties and little courtesies aren't operative. When those courtesies and niceties are operative and someone knows you're on their team, I feel like there's less, you know, nickel and diming each other, you know. But a lot of times it does start with the woman starting mm-hmm. that into motion. Mm-hmm. But so we want to be sure, if you realize your husband's ego isn't in a healthy state, there's three different things that we want to do. We want to be sincere. You know, it says in Matthew 12:34, you poisonous snakes, how can evil people say anything good? Your mouth says what's inside of you. So a lot of times I will take really strict action, what I'm thinking about, what's in my heart, what I am allowing my mind, where I'm allowing my mind to go about my husband. Because I'm going to tell you right now, what you're thinking about him is going to come out in your mouth, if not in your body language. And so I would rather battle my heart and battle my thoughts, and then I don't have to worry that much about what's coming out of my mouth, because if you're thinking right and you're feeling right, you're going to speak right. So really, I think then you are being more sincere, because you're dealing with it in the heart. So I know a lot of times I just feel like our emotions can be run by anything from what we've eaten to our hormone levels to, you know, a lot of different variables, how much sleep we get, how we're feeling at the time, what we're dealing with. But you know what? We have to know that one thing can be true, that despite all those emotions that will usually sink to the lowest part, our heart can be right. And we can take battle against not thinking negatively about the people we love, not just our husband, the people we love. So many times we can make a whole case against someone and they have no idea that we're even hating on them. They have no idea. And they're just trying to live their lives and they're dealing with their problems. And, you know, they might have come off crabby, or, you know, you might have caught him at a weak spot or something, and you're building a case, and, you know, it's just causing so many problems in relationships. So I think the best thing is to, you know, cry out like King David said, you know, search me, O God, and know my thoughts, try me and know my heart, and see if there's any wicked ways in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Like, search my heart, see what I'm thinking, you know, what do you think about? That is so powerful. I was telling you, I even love learning about the power of rumination and what you're rehearsing in your mind, and the power of neuroplasticity, about how you create ruts in your mind. You know, I found that early on in our marriage, I realized my husband walked away from me, and I didn't say anything wrong, but I thought in my head, you are a jerk. And you know what? I realized through knowing the power of words, I realized that just saying that in my head was making that bigger in my mind. And the next time that he did something wrong that I didn't like, that created a rut in my brain. It actually is a physical thing that happens. And then when the next time you get irritated, your brain is like a computer. It's like doing a search. So it's searching for what to do in the face of those emotions, and there you think again, you jerk.
Or he's a bigger jerk.
Right. Again, times two. And you can keep that going so that it's just your habit, so that every time he does something you don't like, you'll say, you jerk, or you idiot. You've heard people say the same thing over and over in the face of frustrations, because that is what happened. Your mm-hmm. brain is searching. But the good news is they have found out with studying the brain, now they're able to map out the brain, They found out no matter how old you are, no matter what, you can retrain your brain until the time you are brain dead or die. So, you know, that is good news. Mm-hmm. So, you know, rather than, you know, program your brain the way you want to think, because it's going to keep going back there. So if he does something that's a little crazy, go, oh, I love that crazy guy, you know, or something. Or this guy is unbelievable. You know, I mean, it's better than you do. So, but program something that you want to be repeated, mm-hmm. and get yourself out of the ruts of your thinking patterns. Pay attention this week to some of your patterns of thinking. You know, some people, it's, I can't take this. You hear it just come out of their mouth. And anything that happens, I can't handle this. You know, whatever it is, it's, start establishing patterns. You mm-hmm. are going to pay attention now, and you're going to notice that in your own life. Look at your patterns. So also speak. Oh, so we want to be sincere. If you don't think he looks good, you don't say he looks good. You know, you can say, wow, I love that sock choice. You know, but find something you really need. You know what I mean? Don't start with, you know, wow, what a great outfit if you don't think it is. I don't believe in being dishonest, but, you know, I think, like, there's enough things that if you're looking for, you'll be able to find something, you know, that you can appreciate. A lot of times, you know, you don't notice because you haven't been paying attention, mm-hmm. you know, so really think about him, you know, just think about him. Speak specifically, you know, what is it, you know, that you admire about him? You know, just seeing it isn't enough. You know, even just to say things like, you know, I'm glad I married you, you know, or I love you. With all your ups and downs, I just love you. You know, don't worry about it. I understand you're going through a hard time. You know, if he feels bad about something, not pushing things in each other's face, just being nice to grow old with. Like some of those songs say, I want to grow old with you and everything. I mean, you don't want those songs to be revised because they hadn't taken a look at you. You know? So we want to really, you know, we want to make good manners our habit. You know, make it your habit. And be green gradually. You know, if they're awkward for you, you know, I love learning to be comfortable feeling uncomfortable, because I really feel if you are going to be intimate, it should be awkward. If I'm not intimate with somebody, then it's never awkward. But that means that I have a grocery store relationship with them. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's awkward for you, that's okay. Some things are okay to be awkward. You know, stumble around and say nice things to people, even if it's awkward. You know, even if it's, don't wait till someone's funeral to say how much you appreciate them, you know? And some people maybe feel awkward too. I mean, there's some people, I'll just grab them and give them hug. You know, even in my own family, I had one of my nieces came in, and her family never hugged, so she would just go in the bathroom, because here she was around this family of 50 huggers all coming at her. It was very overwhelming. So, I mean, but now she's the biggest hugger of all. So, you know, but if it's awkward to compliment, that's okay. Stumble around with it and learn how to do it. And it's okay if you're awkward with some people that you love, you know. Also, be appreciative of little things. What do other people appreciate about your husband? What do they notice about him? Maybe you're missing something if you can't really see. I mean, start looking. You're going to become more sensitive. There was a guy in Lisa Turker's book, and it was a guy that just loved to drive his little bus around and pick up everybody because they were so happy to see him. And he just loved it. And he said, I wish my wife was that happy to see me when I came home. You know, he just loved picking these people up because they were always so happy to see him. But when according to the book Sacred Influence, when a man feels appreciated, it makes him more moldable. He's more receptive to not stay in a bad mood. When he feels he's taken for granted, he becomes more resentful when you suggest anything or, you know, try to cheer him up. But appreciate your spouse. Listen to him. Look at him. Try to determine what kind of day did he have. Did you have a good day? what's going on? You know, ask him and really appreciate him. Also, never underestimate the harvest that comes from small seeds. A lot of times, even if you're putting something on his desk, you know, even just organizing it and putting it in a neater pile, or just doing like little nice things, things that don't take a lot of time. You know, maybe you don't have a couple hours to go do something big, but I'm sure there's a lot of little things you could work in. So, you know, try to look for little opportunities to do nice things. Little seeds end up creating amazing harvest. And actually, so do little things, you know, can grow into big things, but also that can be the same way with negativity too, and sowing bad seeds. If you keep chipping away, those little termites are so small, but they can crumble a whole foundation. So make sure that some of those little chipping away things aren't just so regular that you are just chipping away at a foundation and crumbling something that was solid to start with. So we want to make sure that we're building and putting in good things with our words and our actions. Also make sure you're really listening. You know, if you pay attention, you're going to find out a lot of things. I mean, encourage your husband to talk about things. I mean, a lot of times husbands aren't in the mood to talk, and we talked about that. So you can be comfortable with silence. But when he does start to talk, you know, ask him a few questions and get interested in what's going on in his life. I know that a lot of times, Master and I, during his busier times, we won't have time to talk a whole lot. But even just asking a few questions here and there have resulted in him making a quick phone call to me and just saying, listen, I had a few minutes, but I wanted to tell you what happened with that situation. And it just gives him a companion that cares to talk through things with, because most of our husbands don't really have a buddy that they will do that with. So they won't have the time to develop a friendship like that most times. And so it's really important that we be a really good friend to our husband, and even just a few questions can sometimes you know, make a bridge that then when there's something else that happens in that situation, they know that you care, or you'll ask them how that went, and it's really good. Also, don't just listen to the words, but see behind the words to the value of what he's saying. Like if he said, you know, oh, today was crazy, we had two people, you know, quit, and this person, blah, blah, blah. Like, if you're not really listening, you're not gonna know what that meant to him, you know? But if you're really listening, you could say something like, oh, that must have been so hard for you. Like, what does that mean for you now? Like, what does that put on you? Maybe he had to assume their workload. But if you're not really thinking about it, you won't realize how he was trying to communicate something personal and you didn't even get to that level. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes you have to look a little bit below the surface to discover that. Because a guy will give you this level and you have to see the next level and pull it out sometimes. But one poet wrote, what do I care if she doesn't understand? Do you think it's for a sublime word that I thirst when I feel a soul is gazing into my soul? Sometimes someone just wants to know that you care about what they're thinking and feeling. You know, they don't care if you understand everything that they're talking about, just as long as they know you're trying to, you know, understand. Also, be appreciative for provisions, things that they provide for you. A lot of times, you know, when I start to realize like all the things that my husband does, and you know, I'm really grateful for a lot of the things that he just habitually does, and then I'll go out and I'll realize, oh, he took all the cans back, or he did this, and I'll see that he did those things, and I like to try to thank him for some of the things that he just does habitually. Also, compliment your husband in front of other people. That is so nice when you say, you know, and didn't you used to do that all the time when you were dating? Because, you know, we do that when we're dating. But it's really nice to say, oh, you know, my husband, he's so good at that. Or, oh, man, you should see what he did. Or, you know, it's really, really nice. In fact, today, my husband sent me an email about a job that he had closed, a deal that he had closed. And I thought, that is so awesome. So, you know, I got to text him back, but I also was able to forward it to his two sons and say, hey, look at this is what Dad did. Mm-hmm. Isn't that awesome? So, you know, just to be able to, you know, brag a little bit about your husband. Let him hear that you're, you know, so happy about some of the things that he does. And don't ever, ever, ever trash talk your husband with anyone under any circumstances. Because I am going to tell you something. He doesn't deserve that. You made a promise that you're going to love, cherish, and honor him. And, I mean, okay, if you have a really bad situation, you have to run through something with someone that's a trusted confidant that can help you get on the other, the right side of the bridge and get your actions in control, and you need that person, then pick a person. But if it starts being two people, beware. Now you're fueling a fire. So make sure that you know someone with a good fire extinguisher that can help you. And otherwise, be loyal. We need loyalty. You know, people have started talking to me and I'll be like, if you're not loyal to them, who are you loyal to? If you can't be loyal to your husband, I'm going to tell you right now, you're not loyal. You're not a loyal person. So you want to be loyal. Because you know what? You two are one. When you talk bad about him, you're talking bad about yourself. Because you're part of him. You guys became one. So it's really, really important to really do that. Besides, being negative and looking at people that you're so close with in such a down way, it says more about you than it does about any bad habit that they have. Anything that they've done, I don't care what. It just says more about you. So make sure that you're a good wife that sees good and rehearses good. You know, my mom's been a really good example of that. She always, if I heard her talking about my dad, they were married like 60-some years, and he could be a stinker too. My dad had a hot temper. But when she talked about him, she'd go, oh, look at him. Look at how cute he is when he sleeps. Or, oh, you know what? I've had the best life. Oh, don't worry. Your dad helped me go grocery shopping. He brought all the groceries in. And I know he didn't do everything, but you know what? The things that he did, she magnified, and she bragged about those things, and she made him so happy that she appreciated those things. And really, up to the time that he was in the hospital, he loved helping my mom. But who wouldn't? She makes it so fun to help her. She's so grateful, and she rehearses it to people, and I mean, if you want to help anybody, help her, because it feels like one thing that you did it six times. So it's kind of, expounding on it. But be consistent. Your spouse should be able to count on you, trust you. Remember, Proverbs 31, woman who has virtue, the heart of her husband safely trusts in her. He has no need of spoil. Your husband shouldn't need anything because he has you. So really let your husband trust in you. Make it your job. My kids knew I'd always stick up for my husband, even when I didn't agree with them, which was a lot. You had a hot temper with the kids too. But if I didn't agree, I said, you know your dad. You shouldn't have done that. You knew you were going to have to deal with your dad about that, so now deal with him. You know, and they knew that's what your dad said. We're sticking with that. You know, and it's really good to uphold what he does. Now, there were times that I would have the, you know, private conversation, said, you know, that is, you know, 2 months punishment is kind of harsh when you're gone and I'm enforcing, and we do something that, you know, is a little quicker. A report, something. So, you know, and then because I knew, you know, how to talk to him and win him over and try to help him see another side, quite often we would come together and something he said in the rash of the moment, I let him go back and change. So it wasn't me undermining what he said to the kids, right, making them think that they could come and run to me when they didn't like what he said. Right. You know, and that is all honoring and respecting your husband and making them see that you admire them and that you are not demasculinating them in front of their children and in front of other people, which a lot of shows and everything do, they do mm-hmm. now. It's abhorrent how people, mm-hmm. you know, treat the men. It's quite a trend that needs to be changed. But a lot of times, too, when my kids got older, they would get frustrated with something that maybe my husband would do off the cuff. And, you know, I said, wait a minute. Your dad does so many wonderful things, and you're sitting here talking about that? I don't want to hear about that. Tell me some great, some things that your dad's doing right. You know, and that's the way we need to be, too. You know, a lot of times, you know, they're doing a lot of things right. So don't focus on the one thing that they just don't have a handle on. They might go to the grave and never have a handle on it. So you know what? And we might go to the grave and not have a handle on some of our things mm-hmm. that we're dealing with. So be a little gracious, you know. And anyways, just think about him. When one of my favorite fairy tales when I was younger, I used to live in fairy tale land, and it was like with these two girls, they went to the well, and this lady asked them to pull up some water for them, and the one girl was so mean, and she was like, no, why should I get water for you? Get it yourself. She said, because you are so mean, every time you open your mouth, frogs and snakes and toads are going to come out. But then the other girl hopped, she says, of course, would you like some? You know, she said, oh, you are so kind that every time you open your mouth, jewels and diamonds and roses are going to come out. So I always tell my grandkids that story. Oh, frogs and snakes are coming out. Hi. You know. But then is it actually, because I think of word pictures, I think it's a really great word picture to even think of yourself, you know, when you're talking like, oh, frogs and snakes are coming out. You know, because people are running for cover. Or looking at you like they wish they could. So, anyways, really think about him. I mean, sometimes we are so worried about our own things that we aren't even trying to think about what our husband's going through. So just think about what they're going through too, you know? And just be kind and be gracious. Those just, if you could just remember to do that, you'll be Cinderella. Isn't she gracious? What is she? Oh, she's kind and courageous. But, okay, so you'll almost be Cinderella. You're halfway there. But appreciation is its own reward. I find that when I'm appreciative about what one person does for me, I become more appreciative about what everyone does for me. I love being appreciative. It almost changes your mindset. When you're appreciating things, you can't be ungrateful. When you appreciate things, you can't like want more and expect more. It just brings a lot of things in line. So it's interesting too, because my planner always has like a spot for three things that you're grateful for. And I know my daughter had gotten a journal on joy once, and she said, oh, every night I go to bed I have to list like 3 to 5 things I'm grateful for. But what a great exercise just mm-hmm. in your mind. If you find yourself complaining, because we all complain, you know, sometimes we complain and we're like, what are we complaining about? Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, when I worked at Gilda's Club, they had cancer and they didn't complain half as much as me. I didn't even hear them complain, actually, because they were so grateful for everything that they had, every day, every breath, you know? And I just feel like we need to be more grateful, and then you won't find yourself complaining. And if you're complaining, then guess what? You have to do what I used to make my kids do. Then you have to say 5 things you're grateful for. Mm-hmm. It'll stop you from complaining. And everyone loves being around a grateful person. And no one likes to be around a complaining person. If you've ever been around a person, like, you leave the room and you're worn out. You're just like, that was exhausting. Oh, my gosh. You just almost catch the cloud, you know? Yeah, right. And we don't want to be that, you know? It's very not good to be around. So... And it's really just a choice, because really you can flick it. You can just say, you know what? No, I don't like this. Taking this shirt off and putting a different shirt on. So also, you know, I was talking a little bit about the wow factor. The wow factor is just taking that extra moment when someone does something big for you to make a big deal about it. And just go, wow, what a guy. I always say, wow, what a guy. How am I going to get mad at you now? You know, it's just like where you literally tangibly set up that Ebenezer. It was interesting because when my son graduated from high school, he taught me a lesson because I said, you know, instead of having a party, why don't I just take that money and give it to you for your, towards your computer? He said, Ma, he said, there are some times in your life that you need to just stop and reflect and let people know that have put into your life that you're grateful to have them in your life and to celebrate them and to celebrate that time with the people that got you there. And I was like, whoa. I stand corrected. He corrected me a few times, let me tell you. But it is true. There's sometimes when you just have to mark a moment, you know? And we are in a society, they don't want to mark anything. Not people don't want to have a funeral anymore. And it's just like, we didn't have a funeral for an out-of-town relative that we couldn't go to their funeral. We were really close to him, and I'm just in my car driving. I'm like, did he die? Is he alive? Like, I know I got a call that said he was dead, but I keep thinking of him as alive. So I had to set up a memorial, and we all got together, and we had to mark a moment and talk about him and celebrate his life and go through it and make some time to stop and pause and think about that. And you know what? We have to do that. If someone's doing something out of the way extraordinary for us, it will be okay if you stop everything and make a big deal about it and celebrate it for a few minutes. You know, if somebody got you something extra special, my husband gets really disappointed if I don't do this, but if he got me a coat for my birthday and I got it out and I knew he would be disappointed if I didn't, so I go, let me try it on. I have to admit, wasn't in the mood to try it on, but I wanted to show him how much I loved it. So I was like, you know what? I can't wait. I want to try this on. I go, oh, look at this coat, you know, and it made him so happy that I was so excited that I wanted to try it on, you know, and he was telling the girls about it, telling them, boy, you should see Mom tried it on. And, you know, I just think that sometimes pause and celebrate the moment, you know, and also be on the lookout for something that you can do to be the wow, what a girl, you know. Take the time and try to do something a little out of the way, extraordinarily wonderful once in a while. It's nice. You know, do something crazy. Set up a candlelight for dinner. Your husband will go, what are you doing? Just go, just wanted to have a nice atmosphere. Or, you know, make some of his favorite popcorn and have it ready and pick, you know, so you can pick out the movie tonight. Or just something really nice. You know, my husband, a lot of times he knows I can sew all these clothes for the grandkids, but I hate mending. So I always like, take all the mending out. We take it to the cleaners. He knows usually, but, you know, he came down. He's like, I ripped the pocket of my suit coat. I go, all right, come on, let's go fix it right now. So I stopped everything and I just fixed it because I want to show him that he is worthy of pausing, hitting the pause button, doing something special for him just because he wants it and because he needs it now, and then just making him know that he's that important. So look for those opportunities, because I'm going to tell you, I don't know about you guys, but we're always coming and going. It's really hard to find those opportunities. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think they're everyday things anymore, and I think that's why people are so disjointed in the relationships. I don't think we do that much for people like we used to do. Mm-hmm. You know, when my grandma used to come over and make pizzas, we would bring them down to the whole neighborhood. I mean, I remember so many times as a little girl bringing baked goods to my neighbors and stuff. I mean, how many people do that anymore? Mm-hmm. You don't hear things like that. But, I mean, it's so nice when you can start to do those little things. You know, if you have a little something extra, bring it, you know, leave it on someone's porch, or, you know, do those little nice little things. But, you know, look so... But choices and changes in chapter 8, I think, is awesome because, you know, what we believe about God is going to be how wise we are about life. And there's a lot of choices that we make that help us to live wisely, and a lot of them that put us on those roads that aren't the greatest roads. You know, those words we say, those things we do. But I find that when you are kind and gracious and you use your words, even in an awkward situation, to apologize if you're misunderstood, and not to really mean any ill will to people. I think generally people are going to at least not be able to hate on you. Mm-hmm. They might at least be able to tolerate you if you make it so awkward that they can't help but, you know, say yes. My one friend, she had made a mistake in communicating something, but it was partly her mistake and partly someone else's mistake. But it was a very important relationship that she didn't want to lose or ruin or even eclipse, you know, in a negative way. And so I told her, you know, there's a scripture verse that helps me. It says, agree with your adversary, lest he put you to the judge and the judge to the officer. You know, sometimes just admit you did it wrong. You know, if you make it so that the person knows that you're really sorry for your part, it's really hard for them to still stay mad at you. And if they do, at least you know it's their problem, not yours. You know, and then you leave that and go without making, you know, putting fuel on that flame. But, you know, just going up and saying, you know, I am really sorry. That was out of line. It did not need to be said. And say, not I'm sorry. Say three or four sentences. Force yourself to explain why you were sorry, why it was wrong, why it was in callous, how it's not normally the way you want to be, and how that was a lapse in judgment, and let them know. You know, I mean, it's almost like sometimes we're just so, we can cause a lot of problems and a lot of pain, and then we just think like, oh, sorry. You know, no, not sorry. My grandkids starting to do that. One of them pushes the other one. Oh, sorry. Well, sorry, she almost fell off the slide. You know, you can't just go do the wrong thing and then just say, oh, sorry, flippantly. You should take a little time to make your sorry commensurate with the offense that you just did, you know? But what is number one on your list? This is your first choice. And your goal should be to let your actions show your children and your husband that your husband comes first. So think of how you show your husband that he's number one in your life. So if you had to write down a few ways that you show him that he's the most important thing in your life, what would you write down right now? Think in your brain what you would write down. You know, a lot of times we have the sacred responsibility to the kids, and a lot of people put their kids in front of their husband. That's not really wise. But you want to put, you know, your husband in front of the kids. Kids cry louder a lot of times, but your kids will be gone before you know it, and there you are sitting with that guy. And you want to keep him number one so he doesn't, he have to, you know, go underneath the kids. Also, it's really, parenting together is a firm foundation for a strong, effective family. So I used to keep a Burger King crown at my house, and I'd be like, okay, no, daddy's the king. You know, what he says goes. You know, that's really good. But let's see. It doesn't, you know, abrogate your responsibility to your children. It just helps them to keep their proper place in the, you know, family too. But let's see. Also, how do you handle your children's needs? You shouldn't be pampering your kids and giving into everything they want to. It really doesn't do well for your kids either. So set limits. You know, set limits. If your kids are doing things, say, you know what? We'll do this or this, you know, or, you know, we're going to go roller skating. Everyone can chip in 25 cents of their allowance. Like, I'd have everyone chip in. And they'd be like, oh, we don't want to chip in. I go, well, if it's not worth 25 cents to you, I'm not paying the other $2.75. You know, it's got to be worth something to something if, to somebody if you're giving it to them, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes I find that we're giving our kids things that are worth nothing to them. And then we're mad when they don't appreciate it, but when you really come down to it, it didn't mean anything to them because they didn't even know they wanted it yet. And we're already giving it to them. Mm-hmm. So we've really created a, I don't know about you guys, but I'm really hot. I have to turn this nice fireplace off and lose the ambiance, but it starts sweating. But I really feel like it's important not to raise entitled children. I think they were saying that children are depressed as young as 6 years old. And I'm thinking, 1 in 4 children are depressed. They gave us this statistic. I was thinking, that is crazy. But if we remember what depression is, it's the difference between where what you're supposed to be living at and where you're living. We have allowed children to live so far below their capacity, and we've allowed children to live in a world of, you know, entitlement and entertainment and materialism, so they don't even know how they fit into the world. They're so purposeless. Mm-hmm. They don't have any idea of how they can make a difference in the world, you know, when they're not raised correctly. And usually that's the upper middle class and, you know, families. Because I'll tell you, some of these characteristics of some of these kids that aren't raised with everything, they're out there changing the world. In fact, there's a new movie coming out, Molly, I think the name of it is. Have you guys heard of it?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, it's about a guy that was brought up on the streets with nothing in Africa and Kenya. And he then had some great idea and got a company, and he made like millions of dollars, and he took every single bit of it and gave it back and gave it to help the orphans on the street. And it's supposed to be a very challenging and encouraging movie. I can't wait to hear about it. I think it's supposed to come out.
It's out.
Here. Is it?
Yes. It just came out. My friend sent it to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where's it at? Do you know? If you find out, can you send it to me?
I have the trailer.
Yeah.
Is that the Renee Zellweger in it?
Yeah.
I'll send it to you.
Yeah, okay. I was actually looking for where it was. I couldn't find it today. So,
okay.
But also, sometimes the only thing you can choose is a good attitude or a bad attitude. Sometimes you're not choosing the situation. You need surgery. Someone you love needs surgery. You go to a doctor's appointment. You have to miss work. You're sick. You have strep throat. You have this. Strain. Hurt your ankle, you fell, you broke your wrist. But you know what? In fact, it's funny, I hate to use my mom, but she said a mentor to me, she fell and she broke her her arm, and she broke it in the same place that I broke my arm a few years ago. And let me tell you, she was such a way better sport than I was. It was very challenging, I have to say, or intimidating, one of the two. But I will say that sometimes you can't control that stuff, what happens, but you can control your attitude. You can control whether you have a good attitude or a bad attitude. And sometimes it's just important to remember that, because you're like, well, what can I control here? I want to control something. Well, the only thing you can control in this situation is your attitude. That kind of helps me keep the right one, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So even if your husband never changes, every bad habit, every neglected responsibility, every annoying characteristic, and it stays the same, even for your own spiritual health, learn to love him just the way he is. Too many books and articles ignore this point. Your first step, the primary one, is to love and accept and even honor your imperfect husband. And I love that. I just challenged myself with that. You know, and I love that movie, Steel Magnolias, where it says, I would rather have 30 minutes of wonderful than a lifetime of nothing special. You know what makes 30 minutes of wonderful? You appreciating someone just the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, encourage each other every day while you have the opportunity. If you do this, you won't be deceived by sin and become stubborn, Hebrews says. Encourage each other, Thessalonians says. And so your choice is to either accept or reject him. There's no middle ground. Jesus said, if you're not for me, you're against me. He didn't say, well, you're kind of for me, kind of against me. And, you know, can't say that about our husbands either. Be for them or be against them. Because really, if you are not accepting of him, you're really rejecting him. If you say, well, accept him, accept, here, 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 that's rejecting him. So you know what? Sometimes these words, I love words. They, you know, I used to love when my daughter did, my kids would do sign language because it put words into pictures and stuff. But I think it's, the words are so important. Okay, good attitude, bad attitude. That's easy, it'll come back at you. You know, right in the middle of one of those attitudes, probably the bad one, it'll come back at me. You know what? I can choose a good attitude. It'll come back at you. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm not accepting, I'm rejecting. I don't want to reject, I have to accept. It'll come back at you. Those are great words to just, you know, say the opposites of, you know, accept or reject. Choice number four, affirm or negate. I love the word affirm. It means to make firm. So you can affirm, which, you know the ways that you can affirm somebody by saying something to them, doing something for them. You can affirm them or you can negate them. That's like the opposite. So if you're not affirming someone, you're probably taking away and making less firm or less stable. And I think that, plus the word affirm means to make strong, and the opposite is to cancel out, nullify, invalidate. So if you're not affirming someone, you're pushing invalid, you know, that's terrible. But, so what are the ways that you can affirm your marriage? The words you say, your actions, and what's that third most important one? Your thoughts. So, then choice number five is thermometer or thermostat. A thermometer will read the temperature. A thermostat sets the temperature. And you can really set temperatures a lot of times in the room and in the house. Like, you can just, you know, you can try it one day, just, you know, put a little pep in your step and be encouraging when people come in the door and set a positive temperature and see how that invites a positive attitudes. And then you can come in and people can come in. You can be crabby, picky, and you can see how it will literally start some negativity in motion. Maybe just do it with the positive side. So you don't want to set the negativity in motion. But also, choice number six, I love this one. You can add value or subtract value. You know, there is a, my dad used to always say, leave the place better than you came, you know? Mm-hmm. And he used to mean that because we used to rent rooms for our vacations a lot of times, like old school in New Jersey. And we would go there and he would always go, no, leave the place better than when you came. So we all got in that habit, which is a very nice habit, actually. Mm-hmm. So, but I also feel like we should leave the place better than we came, even if it's a shower or a wedding. Someone called me the other day and like, oh, I gotta go to this event. And I said, well, go find out if you can leave it better than when you came. Go find out. You'll be, see if someone needs a friend tonight and you'll see what you can do to add something to it. But, you know, and see what you can do to leave the place better than you came. You know, encourage a waiter or a waitress that gets scowled at and foot tapped at and complained at because the service, you know, the food people aren't prepping the food fast enough or whatever, but, you know, see if you can make the place better. The value-added proposition, I love that. The value-added proposition is what you bring to your job that somebody else doesn't. So a lot of times people say, well, what are you going to add to that company? And you should know what you're going to add that no one else can. And that a lot of times will get you the job. But I love how it works in relationships too. So I took it from a business leadership book, but listen how it applies to your relationships too. Succinctly, the value-added proposition is what you bring to your husband that the next person doesn't. What makes you or what you have to offer unique and worthwhile? You should be able to sum up your VAP in a few words, although some should argue it should be even less than 10 words. It's kind of like a mission statement. So in effect, what is it that makes you different that got your husband to be sold on you? What was it? As your experience changes, so will your VAP. If your husband asks the old WIIFM question, what's in it for me? Why would he want you to be his wife? What is it that you do for him that no one else does? So, I encourage you to sit down and think through this week. Just think, what value, what's your value added proposition for your husband? What are you, how do you add value to his life? If you're not really adding a lot of value purposefully right now, think of ways that you want to add more value. Or even if you're adding value, but nothing specifically directed at him, more just generally, then purposefully try to initiate a few things where you're adding more value. Just think of a few ways that you could add more value, because we want to, you know, put more in. We want to add value, not take away value. You know, I will say it just boggles my mind how so many people, I mean, I've been counseling for so long, and I have seen so many instances where people literally make it so it's easier to live without them than it is to live with them. I mean, I have seen countless people just say, you say, oh, we got divorced. You're like, I'm so sorry. Oh, that's okay. My life is so much easier now. Like, that is terrible. I mean, you know, but, and isn't there a poem that says, let no one say this to your shame, that everything was beautiful until you came, or something like that. But really, I mean, sometimes you make it such a relief when you're not there. That's what I always told my kids when they would go to school. I'd be like, you go in there and you make such a difference that when you're not there, they're like, oh man, I can't believe they had to miss school. Not like, oh great, I get a break from him today. You know? But we want to add value. Also, choice number 7, look for good or look for bad. What are you looking for? I am telling you, this changes your life, because if you pay attention, you will find yourself looking for negatives. Or you'll find someone else looking for negatives too, because you can spot it so much when you're paying attention. You're like, all of a sudden, you're just like, about your third comment, you're like, okay. Not seeing anything good here. The problem isn't with the situation or the person. I'm having an attitude problem. And so it's time to, you know, a lot of times, you know, in the day we used to say, excuse me, your slip is showing, but it's like, excuse me, your attitude showing, you know. Tuck it back in there, girl. No one wants to see that. So, I mean, it's just, you know, you want to look, you're going to find what you're looking for. So I used to always tell my kids, if you want to find reasons I'm not a good mom, you will find them. I will give you enough for the couch when you're in, at the psychiatrist's office. But, you know, if you want to find all the things that were good about me, you can find that too. It really depends on what you're looking for. And you know what? The same thing holds true for us, mm-hmm. You know? And yeah, even with your adult kids, a lot of times, you know, you have so much that you want your kids to have. You know, you want them to know everything that you know at this side of 50. Mm-hmm. And they're way back on that side, you know? Mm-hmm. And you just want to give it to them in a paragraph or two or something and think that you could save them all this trouble. But you know what? They're going to find out, they have to go through their own experiences. And so really when I look at my kids, I see each one of them and I purposefully look for what they're doing right. It's a hard world they're raising their kids in. And I want to see what they're doing right so I can encourage them in that, you know, because it is so easy to feel criticized, especially by your mom. You know, I was always really tough on myself when I was raising my kids. I don't want them to feel like I'm tough on them while they're raising their kids. You know what I mean? So I want to be a gentler soul that's available for them to encourage them. You know, I think that's really my role in their lives more now, that I'm not training them so much anymore, but offering some suggestions. And suggestions are always a lot easier taken when you know they're coming from an enthusiast for you, you know, so and someone that you're not defending yourself against all the time. It's really easy for women to be critical of their children and their husbands and their families. That's why we have to have this class to keep putting our prescription glasses back on and renewing the prescription, because it's so easy for us to fall into bad habits of being vocally critical, and it just drives people away and doesn't let us impact their lives the way that we can when we are encouraging and looking for the good and seeing, you know. Also, choose joy or choose misery. Oh man, we have to cultivate a life of joy, and you know, we can choose to be miserable. I mean, how many times do we choose to just be plain old crabby? You know, you're just gonna sit in the mood, and it just doesn't pay. You just lose time. Flip the switch, make a change. Learn to have a sense of humor. You know, it says that sense of humor does good like medicine. And actually, they've actually proven, I actually wrote this down. So it says, and it also says, a sad heart makes it hard to get through the day. Doesn't it? When you're sad, wears mm-hmm. you out. I hate mm-hmm. to, if you cry, it's even worse. It takes all your strength and makes you useless. So you want to try not to do that too much. So anyways, it says, Billy Graham said, a keen sense of humor helps us overlook the unbecoming, understand the unconventional, tolerate the unpleasant, overcome the unexpected, and outlast the unbearable. Now, Dr. William Fry from Stanford University said that laughter stimulates the production of the alertness hormones, catecholamines. Now, these hormones cause the release of endorphins in your brain. So endorphins foster relaxation, a sense of well-being, and dulls the perception of pain. So laughter's benefits include decrease in stress hormone levels, strengthening your immune system, muscle relaxation, pain reduction, lowering of your blood pressure, cardiovascular conditioning, and natural antidepressant. So how are you cultivating your sense of humor? We have to have a sense of humor. And you know what? I find a sense of humor can go a long way in turning around a bad situation. My mom has a really good sense of humor, and she will laugh at craziest things and make you laugh. I was walking into surgery once with her, and it was in the days where there was pantyhose, you know? So all of a sudden she goes, oh, what is this? And she's walking, and she pulls out of her pants this thing. It's like, she keeps pulling, it's a pair of pantyhose. It's like, it was stuck from the washer, from the dryer. I was laughing so hard. I just totally forgot about my surgery. But, you know, I'm going to tell you, when you can make your, like, I can make my husband laugh. He's really an intense personality, but I can usually make him laugh, you know, and kind of lighten the mood. And a lot of times, I can get, believe it or not, I'm not always really laughy. Sometimes I can get really somber and crabby. And sometimes I even say, he goes, what's the matter with you? I go, I'm not talking, I'm crabby. He's like, you're crabby. He starts laughing because he doesn't usually, I usually let him, I'm crabby today. Things aren't going my way. But, you know, you've got to see the humor. I learned that early on with having 5 kids in 5.5 years. Let me tell you. I mean, your grocery shopping and your potty training, you're opening the Scott towels because you're having accidents. I mean, you just have to picture what it looks like from the outside, and you have to laugh. Because if you get too caught up in it, you'll cry. So instead, I would kind of pretend I was watching it on a movie, and it would be really funny to me. But sometimes you do have to cultivate your sense of humor. I mean, sometimes it's even just good to just try to give a belly laugh. Even if you're not in the mood to laugh, just start laughing. And all of a sudden, it just lightens everything up. I really believe that stress causes a lot of diseases. Mm-hmm. And I think we carry way too much stress. A lot of times I get really upset. If my kids get upset over something, I'm like, you can't cry that much. You are not supposed to get that stressed out over stuff. Like, you need to relax and trust God and laugh. I'm trying to get all my, you know, anecdotes for their being so upset. But I really believe that there's a lot of diseases that are caused by stress. Mm-hmm. And we have to be careful that we're not carrying stress that we're not meant to carry. And a lot of times, I've been through tough situations too. I mean, I've been through, you know, my sister died, and you know, when my dad died, and we've had people that were diagnosed with big problems, and they can be stressful, but you can't take them on. You can't take that on and live there. We aren't meant to. And so you have to be really careful. A lot of people would even ask my mom, they'd say, how did you get through that grief of having your husband of 60 some years die, and then 6 months later your little girl die? And she's just like, she said, you know what? Gratitude pushed out depression. She said, every time I started to get really sad, I would just be so grateful for everything I had with them. And so we just have to be careful. I've seen people at Gilda's Club literally walk up to death's door and not carry the stress, but really, I think, like, and they had every reason to be very stressed out, but I think we have to get into a stress management thing if we're not managing stress right, and you have to learn how to manage that. But I know that sometimes if I'm, you know, getting sad, I'll turn on Brian Reagan. Did you ever see the Meme Monster on YouTube? He is so funny. Oh my goodness. Or he's just, his name's Brian Reagan, and he just makes me laugh. And he's just a clean comedian. It was funny because I was on a cruise once and he was the comedian. I said, oh, how about that? So, but he just makes me laugh so much. So a lot of times I'll just go and put him on and just laugh, you know? So find someone that makes you laugh and try to laugh. See your life as a little bit, see the comical side of what you're going through. If something's, you know, cataclysmic and, you know, the things that not going to change. I mean, once, I know we had a really stressful time. We were bringing all the kids. We saved our money, and we finally had enough money to go to Disney World. We had to go to the camping site to do it. So we were in this crazy trailer. We looked like the Beverly Hillbillies. I mean, it was like this little wooden trailer that we're pulling in a car with all our stuff in it. And we had all these little kids, and our trailer broke in Georgia or something. We were all so hot. We're waiting. We got so pushed behind that we didn't pull into Disney World till like midnight. And my husband's blowing up the things. And it was very stressful, but it was very hilarious. Like, we were such a sight to see, really. And we almost lost everything. So then it got the whole thing, the camp set up. And we went to put the kids in the tent, and he put the tent facing right into the woods. So we had to, like, literally, like, we had to go machete through brush to get into the tent, you know? I was just like, I just looked at him, and I was like, But you have to see the funny side of things, and if you start to train yourself to do that, you'll realize that to make a big deal out of stuff, it just doesn't pay anyway. So, like, lessen the intensity, and it's wise to just take a little work and effort and practice a well-developed sense of humor. It's called the sunshine of your mind. Even if you just have some situations you just think are funny, write them down and think about things that make you laugh and be happy, you know? It says, J.M. Barrie said, those who bring sunshine to the lives of others cannot keep it from themselves. And that's true. And in a book that was actually, or an article that was written, Joe Love, isn't that a cute last name, Love? That's a little reminder. He wrote a book called Developing Your Sense of Humor. And he said, most of us have a tendency to believe that any problem at that particular moment that we're facing is the most important thing going on in the world. We all have that tendency, okay? We all do it. So this way is a heavy responsibility. It becomes the focus of your being. That's why you have to develop your sense of humor, because then you can see yourself in the scope of things rather than at the center of things. And so when you look at things with a sense of humor perspective, it enables you to have a remarkable capacity to control the things that are going on in your life. You can't control the external events in your life, but you can control how you look at them. An important part of a well-developed sense of humor is the capacity to take yourself lightly, even though you take the problem seriously. A sense of joy in being alive is an intimate component of the human will to live. You have to work at it. It is not easy. The root form of humor is humor in Latin, and it means to be fluid and flexible like water. And that is what humor is about. It's staying flexible so you don't become broken by the difficulties you confront. And seriously, it allows your creative mind to stay open. I mean, and he says, people over the age of 35, they can hardly write down three things that make them happy. But you have to start, you know, cultivating that and make a list of the things that enjoy and develop your sense of humor. Find out what people that makes people happy. Start developing a sense of humor. Spread it around. Put a smile on people's face. You know, even if it's just like when my husband works on, I'm like, you're not a man, you're a machine. You know, But you know, I think that's so important that you develop that side of you and make life a little bit more fun, a little bit more lighthearted, you know, and it helps you get through things. I find that one of the things that I'm so glad that I gave my kids the ability to do is to know that they could make mistakes and those mistakes not define them, and that they didn't have to live in their mistakes. And I gave them the ability to overcome obstacles. Think that we all have so many obstacles, don't we? Just things standing in the way of our day, of our weeks, of our moments, and of our relationships. And it's so important that we learn how to overcome obstacles. And this is really a good way to do that, you know. Another thing that we can look at, another decision, is to encourage yourself or become discouraged. That's another really important thing that you have to choose, to know how to encourage yourself. You can't wait for someone else to encourage you. I love that word, encourage. It gives you courage. When you can encourage yourself, it'll give you courage to face the day. You have to be able to encourage yourself. You can't sit around and wait for someone to come and encourage you, because sometimes no one's gonna show up. And then you can't just be all discouraged. You have to be able to encourage yourself and be able to, you know, and strengthen yourself. I know a lot of times if I'm distressed, I cannot get through the situation. It's like I read in the Bible that strength and gladness are found in the presence of the Lord. So when I'm weak and I am not happy, I just get into the presence of God. And I find that it is true. It says it twice in the Bible, actually. Strength and gladness are found in God's presence. So if you find yourself that you're weak for the moment, or then a lot of times there's so many apps now. I have a little app on my TV. I'll even just put on the Gospel of John in the background, or I'll put on a praise music, or I'll open up the Bible. But it's strength and gladness are found in the presence of the Lord. So it's good. But too often we lean on our own understanding and we try to overcome something that we don't have the ability to. But we have to. When we come to God, He puts things in perspective. And I think that's really helpful. So what trials are you facing? And if you're losing strength and losing your joy, spend time in the presence of God and seek His wisdom, and you know, let His peace keep your heart and guard your mind and take back what the enemy tries to take from you. And the number 10 is to work hard or hardly work. You know, in order to enjoy the fruit of your labors, you have to work. And I find that a lot of times, especially when I was raising all my teenagers, I just slack off sometimes. I was tired, you know. I'm running around, doing prom, doing this. And I'm like, okay, guys, I'm rolling up my sleeves. Got a little sloppy there, but, you know, and you just got to get back in that game, you know. If you find yourself slacking in any area, just roll up your sleeves and just do it in your mind just go, you know what? I need to get back into that. I have let that go. I've let that go. And, you know, just like that plot of ground we talked about, I could have a plot of ground. I could get all ready to sow my garden in it. And if I do nothing, I can't just go out there in 6 months and think I can pick up where I left off, right? What happened? Everything drifted in. Now I got a bunch of more work to do. And sometimes we have to know, if we put something down that we should have been attending to, we might have to work a little harder, but we can still work at it and take, you know, action against it. So, also to commit or to disavow. Commit means to bring together. So commitment, you know, means that you're not on autopilot, so you and your spouse don't know where you're headed. It's like, where do you want to go? What do you need to do? How committed are you? What does your life show? What does your time investment show? Where your commitment is? Be committed. Don't like disavow, which is kind of interesting. That word actually has vow in it, like the vows. And, you know, we don't want to come away from our vows. So, also, we can be selfish or unselfish. Oh, man, that word is a two-bit word, huh? I'm telling you. But being selfish is only being worried about yourself. And that is so easy to do, especially if you're feeling on the downside that no one else is taking care of your needs. You feel like someone's got to stand up for you. So you might feel like, hey, I got to be selfish. No one's thinking of me. But you know what? There's a way and a perspective. You know, we have to learn to embrace denying ourselves. I mean, there's a couple things you should work on doing every day. Practicing, denying yourself, being unselfish, not getting your own way. Those are things that make you stronger in character. You know, the world has a total opposite thinking. Oh, get all you can, you know, and everything that you're getting out of it. You know what? That isn't even the way to be happy. You are most happy when you're unselfish, not when you're selfish. And so, you know, find ways to deny yourself a few things, you know, and purposefully teach your kids to know how to deny themselves. It's so important, not get everything and wait and earn and, you know, it's just the best thing. And to be considerate of other people's feelings even more than yourself. I mean, when you even think of Christmas, I mean, when you really think of it, isn't it way more fun to give a gift than it is to get one anyways? So find the joys of being unselfish. And a lot of times, if you're so busy looking for what you can get, you're not even that tuned in on what you can give. And that makes life really dull. It just does. And honestly, I don't know about you guys, but whenever you're focused on what you get, it's just like when you get a new stove. It's like, okay, now what else do I need? It's not like you're ever going to be happy. So give it up. Isn't that true, though?
Yeah.
It's like you get that, and you're like, okay, now what else on the list? But seriously, but when you give, it's not like that. It's like you can give, and, you know, it's just so much more rewarding and so less bottomless. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it makes you feel way better. But also, you can leave them out or let them in. That's an important one. So make it easy for someone to get back into your graces after they faulted you. I find, like, a lot of times I've seen people make other people jump through hoops. You owe me an apology. I hate that saying. Like, no one owes us anything. What are we talking about? But I don't like that saying. But I just feel like, oh, like, how long do they need to suffer before they can come back in? They said they were sorry. Like, learn to drop something. Like, make it easy for someone to come back in, you know? And if someone disappoints you or something, or your kids do wrong, or your husband is wrong, or a friend is wrong, you know, don't have a certain prescription that they have to follow to get back in. Like, just let them in. You'll be much happier. So in the end, when you're gracious, it allows people to change their heart and their mind, and you can enjoy the rest of your time together. Try not to make so much time taking on all this bantering and all this garbage that makes situations more important than relationships, you know? We all make choices But in the end, our choices make us, right? Mm-hmm. So I love going through the choices because it kind of makes those two flip sides, like, what are we choosing here? What am I choosing? And it kind of just puts it real simple, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Can you hit that for me? So does anybody...